The following Piano Jazz podcast was produced from a show which originally aired in 1990.
Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today is Andre Previn, the quintessential musician. He's a world-renowned conductor and composer, but to me, best of all, he's a spectacular jazz pianist. Andre, it's so wonderful to have you here doing piano jazz. I just can't believe it. You know, I've been chasing you for about 10 years.
I know. I have 10 years of guilt on my side because I was never able to do it. And then, of course, I'm terrible about answering. You know, what happens is I go out on tour and I'm gone a long time and I come back and I find mountains of mail. And then I'm just terrible about really going through it and answering letters from friends, which you are. It's just, I have no excuse. But anyway, I'm here.
You're here, and I'm just so thrilled. And actually, it's worked out well, because all the times that I was trying to persuade you to do the show, you had not made a new jazz album. And now you've got a new one and a second one coming out soon. It's just wonderful. You're just back in our end of the business again. Well,
up to a point. Yeah, it's true. I didn't play anything where you have to keep time in 28 years. Seriously.
Well, you didn't have to keep time.
Know what I mean. But 28 years, I didn't go near it except just for fun. And people were kind enough to keep suggesting it. And finally, when Bob Woods of Telarc Records said it for the 10th time, I said, I'll tell you what we'll do. This is serious now. This is the absolute gospel truth. I said, first of all, I need insurance. I need Ray Brown and I need Joe Pass, because then when things get tough, I can just lay out and let them play and it'll be fine. And I said, the other thing is, seriously, after one session, I want you to give me 10 minutes time and I'm going to talk to the guys. And if it's embarrassing for anybody, you know, for me, for them, for an audience, you know, then you have to have paid for a session and that's it, no album. And of course, with three people, it's not much of an expense. And he said, fine. And at the end of the first session, I did talk to them out in the hall and they were very sweet. They looked at me as if I'd gone mad. And so we went back in and went on. And I had such a nice time that we then made another one, except this one was with Mundell Lowe instead of Joe.
But now this particular tune you're going to do, this is from the Telarc album, the first one.
No, it's from the second one.
From the second one.
From the second one. But I have to tell you very quickly that I found an ancient, a 10-inch LP, that goes to show you how old it was, in a shop in San Francisco. And I went in, it was a bin of old, old records. And I went in and I said to the guy, how much for this? And he had no idea who I was. And he took a look at the record and he said, you can have it. And I was so insulted, I couldn't speak.
What was it, one of yours?
Yeah, an ancient record. He was absolutely right, but it was a very bad thing to hear. All right, you want to hear Stormy Weather?
Stormy Weather.
All right.
I don't know why I think this, but it was sort of Scriabin-ish a couple of times.
Well, I suppose in Russia they have a lot of stormy weather. I don't know.
It's fascinating here.
Oh, that's nice of you.
It's fascinating.
Thank you. There's supposed to be all kinds of harmonic rules about jazz these days, but I don't much care about it. I mean, there's all kinds of rules about the superimposition of chords. But once you stick to those rules, you're back to playing a cliché. So
you can't have rules. I mean, or if you do, they're just meant to be broken.
Yeah.
But anyway, how did you actually start?
I went to work not for any reason, but I kind of had to. You know, we
What do you mean?
Well, I mean the family needed some money.
It's oh, really? Simple. Oh, that yes. kind of
that
had
kind
to.
Of had to. And I went to work as an arranger when I was 16, 17.
Well, that you came over here from.
I came over from Europe when I was 10. And then when I was about 16 or 17, in those days, don't forget that they made endless amounts of movies and endless musicals, which is a genre that's gone now almost. And they needed anybody that could move a pencil around. And I was young and extremely cheap, and I could do it. And so I became an arranger at MGM and an orchestrator. And then after a while, I got to do my own movies when I was 19. And stayed there for a long time. I stayed in that business until off and on until 1964, and that was the last time I did a movie.
But then you were already into jazz and doing all those albums of My Fair Lady.
Well, the Fair Lady album, you know, that was very interesting because Shelley and Leroy Vinegar and I met at the old Contemporary Records studios on Melrose Place in Los Angeles, and we decided we'd make a trio album, anything. And at that time, My Fair Lady had just opened on Broadway and was the kind of success that people dream about and remember forever. And Les Koenig, who ran the company, said, why don't you make all the tunes? Well, you know perfectly well, who knows all the tunes from a Broadway show? And we had to go out to an all-night record shop and get the cast album and come back. And we'd listen to it and then we would play it. And by morning, we had the album finished, and I said, Les, this is going to be the most expensive private record ever made because they'll never let you release this, Lerner and Lowe, because I had successfully damaged all their tunes. And then, to my great surprise, they loved it. And what's funny is that it sold an awful lot of copies, and of course, instantly, I tried to make another one. And it never happened again. I mean, My Fair Lady sold a million copies, which for jazz records was a lot. And I tried with all kinds of things, West Side Story, Pal Joey, Little Abner even, Bells Are Ringing, Gigi, never happened again.
But I can see why that would be a landmark album. It was it was so
good. You want to play something together?
Yeah.
All right.
Sure. What?
Well, we had discussed one of those I Got Rhythm with the Honeysuckle Bridge tunes of Ellington's, which I think in honor of you and in honor of the fact that I lived in Surrey for 23 years, it's nice to do a tune called Good Queen Bess.
Oh, and we should do it in honor of the Queen.
Yeah.
All right. All right, let's see now.
This is her favorite.
I just have a feeling, I don't know if she swings or not, but anyway. All right, here goes with Good Queen Bess.
It's called No Ending, folks. All right.
Oh, you did that on one of the records, too. The thing ended. I think it was CJM Blues. You all ended it.
Yeah.
And then about two bars later, Joe Pass went something like that.
Well, Ray is also a big one for suddenly putting in a couple more notes at the end. But they're always the right notes.
I'm interested how you reconcile all these different things that you do. You know, fine jazz pianist, you're a great conductor, you're a classical composer, you know.
But you don't have to reconcile anything, Marion, I don't think. You see, I mean, I'm very lucky. I've been able to do a certain amount of things, at least well enough to get away with it. And as long as I'm allowed to, I don't see why not. It used to be that when I was starting out as a classical conductor, had I played jazz at the same time, there would have been a certain amount of ill-advised people who would have looked down their nose very strongly at that. But now it doesn't matter. I don't have to prove anything, really. And I enjoy playing again, and I've always liked composing, and I'm composing more and more. So I don't really think that one has to bounce off the other. I'm not a great believer in the crossover business. I also was never a believer in the old days of what used to be misnomered the third stream. Do you remember that?
Oh, sure. That's still going on. I know, they still use that.
It makes everybody unhappy. You know, you used to get some Milt Jackson with a string quartet. I don't know who was unhappier, Bags or the quartet, you know. So it doesn't work, because I think both things are absolutely valid on their own.
Then you don't believe in having like a jazz group with a symphony orchestra?
Not terribly. Not terribly, because what happens is usually that the symphony orchestra has to be pulled along like a great, huge, immovable truck. And no, really. And it's just very difficult. I remember three, four years ago, when Buddy Rich came and played with his band, with the RPO. And the RPO is full of young guys who can really play and all that. But it's just a different kind of outlook on what keeping time means, and it was hopeless, I thought.
Really?
I don't mind it, I guess, if it's just tunes, but if it's supposedly compositions, even a really great man like Ellington, I thought he came a cropper when he tried to write for symphony orchestra. I don't think it worked.
You know, it was funny, because I heard you not too long ago with the Los Angeles Symphony out in Long Island, and you played two very different things. You played Beethoven, I can't remember which one, popular symphony that people just love. And then you did the Shostakovich.
Shostakovich Fourth Symphony, which is over an hour of gloom.
But there were some wonderful things in it. Now, of course, you wouldn't agree with this. See, I found myself picking out themes and thinking, gee, I could almost play this as a ballad.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, sure. No, there's nothing wrong with that, just not at the same time that doing it.
No, I wouldn't attempt to.
No, that's fine. I think that whatever music says to you is perfectly valid. So I see nothing wrong with that. I don't have any rules governed by misplaced snobism at all.
Misplaced what?
Snobism. I think that if, you know, it doesn't make any difference if you're listening to a Requiem Mass and you suddenly think that'll make a nice shout chorus sometime, that's fine with me. I don't care. But
this thing is getting away from me. We're going to have to come back and play some more tunes.
All right. Okay.
Let's see.
Listen, when we were fooling around, you were sweet. You liked the tune I was playing, and then you didn't know I had written it.
I'm embarrassed.
I should have known. Nobody knows.
But it's a beautiful tune.
Well, it was written for a movie, and it was called You're Gonna Hear From Me, and it languished in unplayed vaults for many years, and then suddenly jazz guys began to play it. Bill Evans made a record, and Woody Herman made a record, and Rosie Clooney made a record, and like that. I personally don't... I don't really play choruses on it, but I'll play you the tune because it's a nice tune.
Please play me the tune.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station or stream the program online at pianojazz.npr.org. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina Public Radio.